vows and precepts if you have taken them. If not, what is the path and methods? How to live fully and peacefully in our life? Okay? So with that, this is the title for tonight. So tonight we'll talk about paths and methods. And so I will explain, maybe there are some paths that I may need to explain completely or separate days. So I'm not going to go too detailed, but I'm going to explain what I have prepared. So you may see some misspellings or maybe some editing work that need to be done. I just put this together, and I'm not still expert creating PowerPoints. So, but I will share you what I have there. So, Bob, can you press the next? Okay. So first of all, five paths. There are five paths in Buddhist teaching. Paths meaning really stages. And in Buddhist teaching, what you find is there's a very, very clear stages, developmental stages, starting from first stage, then to the next, then to the next. So it has a system put together how to achieve realization of reality, how to achieve the transformation of afflicted thoughts and emotion. So today we will start from there in terms of reference. So these are the five paths, all paths that can be summarized into these five paths. But in a Heart Sutra, which is essential Mahayana teaching, it is a philosophical teaching and a practice on the ultimate reality of universe. But within that, this is the mantra. A mantra usually means, man means mind, tara means protection. So mantra means protection of mind. It makes sense that if you recite either positive or negative, both will protect from the opposite mental states. Hopefully this time we have positive mantras, reciting positive things, so our mind is focusing on that, prevent and protect from negative thoughts or negative emotions or mental states. Okay, so that's what mantra means. But mantra also means recitation. So recitation, this is the recitation. Gate, gate, parasamgate, bodhisoha. So that is the mantra recitation, Heart Sutra, and it includes the five stages. And so here is the So these original words are in Sanskrit, and this is English translation. First gate, go. Second gate, still go. Para gate, go beyond. And para sam gate, go beyond completely. This is a miss. So go beyond completely, and at the end, then achieve a state of Buddhahood. Okay. So just looking at this, Buddhism teaches how to move from one stage to the next stage. So anywhere there's a stagnation, it's considered as spiritually stuck. And then there, that's where we may experience lots of difficulties in our life. So as long as we are moving either forward, backward, both are important. So moving and doing doesn't mean only forward. That can be very, very myth and kind of fantasy. So the reality is moving forward, coming backward, moving backward, and still moving. So these are the translations. The first go, the first gate means stage of accumulation. And I will explain each stages later on. The second go, meaning stage of application. And this paragade meaning stage of direct realization, and then parasangade means stage of familiarization, which is also translated as meditation. But I put familiarization, that's more accurate translation than meditation. And then the last one is stage of ultimate result. In Buddhist teaching, it will say five paths, but really the last one is not a path, it is the result itself. But somehow the result is designated as path. I think that's a very important meaning. So we may get stuck with the result. But important point is that every path itself is a result. So we're not waiting for a result at the end. So every time we reach to a different path, it is still result. But especially if we reach to the final result, that is still the path. But it is not exactly the path, it is the result. So I'm just sharing why the result is still called path. That's that result is not the end, but result also happens within the path. Okay? So next, please. Any question before I move? So you all are able to recite Gate Gate? How about can you, oh yeah, okay. So Gate, how about we recite together?
Gate Gate, para Gate, para Samangate, Bodhisoha. Gate Gate, para Gate, para Samangate, Bodhisoha.
So then the question is, when do you recite this? You recite when you walk, when you run, especially when you feel you're stuck, overwhelmed, you just say, Gate, Gate, Gate. You can just do the Gate, 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 Gate. Yes.
Soha, what does that mean?
Soha usually means establish. So establish the Bodhi. Bodhi also means Buddha. Okay. All right, now next. Okay, so before I explain five stages, I need to explain these different Buddhist schools. Okay. Now, first of all, these Buddhist schools are called vehicles. And if you notice our emblem, we have wheel, Dharma wheel. So all of these schools are called yana, that means vehicle. Again, it indicates that our practice is to move. Okay, our practice is like a transportation, and just keep on moving. And that's why we also have these different schools, and you keep on moving from here to here and here. So idea is not to get stuck. So the idea is not to get stuck with one system or one approach. You just need to keep on moving. So first of all, in general, in Buddhism, there are three schools. The first one, Hinayana, it is also translated, or now these days called Theravada. The first or more classical original teachings of Buddha. And then Mahayana refers to Mahayana Bodhisattva. And then Vajrayana or Tantrayana, Buddhist Tantrayana school. So first of all, we all are not same, we are different. We have a different mental capacities, different interests, different abilities. So therefore, all these are designed to meet the differences that we have. Now, first of all, for example, these two can be differentiated based on what type of mental state we have. For example, we notice that there is something suffering within ourselves or with others, and then suddenly we understood and we experienced this strong urge to or interest to overcome. But overcome that suffering for one's own state of nirvana, one's own freedom, because of how I cultivate intention and motivation that actually relates to this first school. Okay. Now, for the same situation, we understood there's a suffering and we want to overcome suffering, and this time you have a different purpose, a different intention, and that is, I want to overcome, reduce this suffering for the benefit of all others. So if you have that mental state, now it relates to here. Okay. So not only that, the initial intention motivation also affects the result and the outcome. So because the intention is to overcome one's own suffering, therefore the result is nirvana. That means individual liberation. Okay? And that will be the end. Whereas here, because the intention is benefiting for others, therefore the end result will be not only achieving enlightenment, but taking rebirth because of compassion and loving kindness. Because of that, take rebirth and continue in samsara. So living in samsara. So you can see how our intention, our motivation distinguishes what type of school, what type of result we'll get. Okay? Now, if you come here or let's say you are practicing this, Mayana. Now Mayana doesn't mean one particular place in Olympia. Mayana is a general name for all Mayana Buddhism. So let's say at this moment you have intention to benefit for others, and then tomorrow you feel very overwhelmed and you come up this intention that I really need to take care of myself, I need to really take care of this stress, then you are here. So what I'm saying is nothing to be attached and stuck. And it's not the person which distinguishes these two, but the insight, motivation, intention and state, mental state, distinguishes. Okay? So I usually say, if you are raised in Democrat, you are not always Democrat, because Democrat is based on the value and some idea. And on the other day, you have conservative ideas, the same body, then you are not anymore Democrat. You are conservative, maybe Republican. Okay. But then there could be Republicans who are raised as a Republican, but then certain days and times, they have a mental different values, more liberal ideas. Then they also shift to Democrats. So nothing stays same. Everything changes based on our mental state and understanding. Okay? All right. Okay. So this Vajrayana currently refers to Tibetan Vajrayana or Nepalese Vajrayana or Bhutanese Vajrayana. But initially, Vajrayana also came from India to Tibet. Okay? Now, this is how people say these days. That's why I call it general. But then classical textbooks, in actual Buddhist textbooks, then it will have these three schools. Herer Buddha, in Tibetan it's called Nyentö. Nyen means hearing, hearing or listening teachings, and then practice, and then achieve Nirvana. Self-realization is another thought that person doesn't depend on someone else, but once receive teaching practices, then person actually practice by himself, herself, and achieve self-realization. And then this is Mahayana. So this Mahayana refers to same as this or that, Mahayana Bodhisattva. Okay. Again, because there are three, or especially these three, these are the classical three Buddhist schools, because there are three, so each school or each vehicle presents five different paths. Okay? So therefore, we'll have 15 paths. So for your practical purpose, maybe we'll use this one. So if you are here, you still have five different paths. If you're here, you still have five. So anyhow, all the paths are summarized into five paths. Okay? So next we'll see the five paths. Yes?
You gave an example of a mental state for Himayana and Mahayana.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give an example for a mental state that would go with the Vajrayana?
Vajrayana? Yes.
Please.
Vajrayana mental state could be it is a Mahayana Bodhisattva, Mahayana tradition, so the intention is same, to engage with the practice for the benefit of others, but the path is based on, let's say, compassionate deities. So the intention is for the benefit of others, but the method will be more visualization base or mantra or actually sudden practices of deity practices. Okay? All right. So first of all, you may have heard many teachings. But to summarize all the practice, there are many teachings, classical teachings, contemporaries. So today I will bring this citation from Vasubandhu, Abhidhamma Kosha, if you care. It is from chapter 6, which explains about paths and practices. So within this Abhidhamma Kosha, it says that abiding on ethics or moral conducts involved with learning, contemplation, and engaging meditation. And that includes the whole practice. So you can see that our foundation practice is based on ethics or moral conducts. So for me, as I explained last time, ethics and moral conducts means essential teachings put together as ethics, something like that. So for example, here, ethics, there is a Theravadan ethics, both monastic and lay people. And then same for the Mahayana, monastic and lay people. But this is more common. I'm not saying this is, that includes Hinayana and Mahayana includes, but these ethics also includes loving kindness, compassion, empathy, rejoice, equanimity, all of those. All of those are included here. So once we have that as a motivation, then we engage with the learning. So usually you hear three wisdoms. Wisdom of learning, wisdom of contemplation, and wisdom of meditation. So once we have a certain ethics as a foundation, then we engage with the learning. So learning here meaning learning from teacher, learning from textbooks, learning from your direct life experience. Whatever you have learned, then it is recommended to engage with the contemplation, reflection, analyzing, discussion, all needs to be happening. So once we have learning and contemplation, then the most important is to engage in meditation. So engage in meditation here means actual practice. So sometimes we lose balance between study and practice. Okay. So there are different traditions which may focus more on practice, sometimes more on studies, but I usually recommend that you have some balance between study and practice. Okay? So here, meditation also means intellectually, through learning and contemplation, we have some intellectual understanding. That is really not enough. It would not actually reach to our realization and transformation. So through our practice, kind of observing this learning, understanding in our system from the brain to the whole body, or at least towards our heart. So connecting between our brain and heart. That is what we need, okay? So because of that, these are one of the models of paths. Okay. So sometimes we may also use familiarization. And meditation word, I don't like very much because it has a different meaning in the West. But the original term for meditation is bhavana in Sanskrit. It means becoming familiar with what we have learned or experienced through contemplation and learning. Okay. All right. So next. Bye. Okay. So these are the five stages. On this slide, what I want to show you is a significant gap between these first two and last three. So when we engage with our study practice, we gain different realization and different transformations. So these first two are considered as ordinary path, meaning that we remain as ordinary while we are practicing. Okay? These two. And then from three, these three, and especially, yes, these three are considered as, in Sanskrit it is called Arya. And I'm sure this Arya doesn't relate to Hitler's search of Arya, authentic human being. But, So this is the ordinary, and these three are considered as realized paths. Okay? So that means just looking at here, direct realization. And these two doesn't have a direct realization. So let me explain what does direct realization means. So at the beginning, we may conceptualize what is meditation, what is impermanence, what is emptiness, what is interdependent nature, we will just have some conceptual understanding. So because of that, when we see car, we still need to go through that thinking process. We are not able to see the reality of car right away when we see the car or when we hear the sound of the car. But when we reach here, then there is no conceptual thought. Okay? There is no conceptual thought. There is no need of conceptual thought. There is no need of examples. There is no need of any reference. Because now, doing these two, we build the habit to understand, for example, impermanence again and again and again. And now person reach here, see car, or hear the sound of the car, and able to see permanence right away. So then the question is, what would be the benefit of that? Well, if we see things directly, then we would not have emotional reactions. We would not have afflictive emotion or emotion reactions to the sounds that we hear. Or we would not have a reaction if car cracks or stole by someone. We would not have any reaction because when you reach to direct realization, that eliminates the grosser level of afflictive emotions. And I will explain that more. But anyhow, the important part is that these two are the ordinary and these three are the realized, direct realized beings, practitioners. Okay? All right. Any question? Okay. So just looking at this, what do you see there?
It makes me wonder what you do with that significant gap. How do you bridge that gap?
Okay. So then that depends these practices. Mm-hmm. Practices here, and there will actually reach here. And I will explain more what are these two after this slide that will answer your question.
So I have one more question. So you said that familiarization is another term, or is sometimes called meditation.
Yes, yes.
So probably most of us are at stage one or two, but mm-hmm. we're doing meditations.
Then. Right.
So what's the difference between meditation at stage one and meditation at stage four?
Right. So these meditations can be very short, can be maybe occasional, not much consistency, so duration was short, and the practice, the scope or the practice itself is still based on conceptual, not much direct experience. Mm-hmm. So as we get closer, we'll have more direct experience, and especially over here, more direct experience and lesser conceptual thoughts, okay? And then we will reach here.
Okay.
So here, I'll explain more about this later on. But this is like duration-wise longer. The practice itself is more advanced comparing to the above stages. Yes?
I heard it, well, I've also read about the fact that one can get so stuck in your practice,
mm-hmm.
wanting to achieve realization,
mm-hmm.
that actually becomes an obstacle.
Yes, that is true.
Could you comment?
Yeah, that is true. The simple answer is, first, we need to find out what is our goal in our daily life.
Right.
So once we find our goal, then the focus is not the goal, but the focus is what cause and condition that will take to our goal. So likewise, in our Dharma practice, when you do meditation, you know already what your goal is, so you're not actually focusing on to achieve that goal. You're focusing on what practicing you're doing now. Then that will prevent such obstacles. Yes?
It seems like it may also be possible that when you're actually experiencing a loss, like remember the death of my mother was very painful,
yes.
And you're faced immediately with that
mm-hmm.
realization of impermanence,
mm-hmm.
that the first two stages are really kind of moot, but you're like realizing things directly and in that
right.
state
right.
of realization of how things
right.
really are.
Right, right. So I want to actually clarify that we would have a direct realization here. Maybe we'll have a direct realization of 1 minute, 5 minutes, 20, 30, 1 hour, maybe 1 day. But then it doesn't last very much. Whereas here, it tends to last longer. It's more pervasive in one's life. Now that doesn't mean that, okay, so I'll come back. So that's the difference between this and that. Same as this meditation and these two meditations. Okay. So can you press the next and we'll see more? Okay. So now we are talking about what is stage of accumulation. So a stage of accumulation meaning cultivating realization and renunciation of, not worldly, it's a worldly. Worldly suffering and its sources, and resolved into free from the suffering and the sources. So that also means two things. When we start our path, we encounter some degree of suffering within ourselves or others. So therefore, actually from Buddhist point of view, facing suffering itself and the sources of suffering is not viewed as necessarily negative. It can be painful, but in terms of realization and transformation, that is a very, very natural process, inevitable in our life. So therefore, if we realize this, the degree of the suffering and the sources of the suffering within ourselves and others, that will really cultivate this sense of urgency to change, to overcome. So that's what renunciation means. So renunciation is not necessarily giving up one's life or giving up one's family, especially for lay people. Okay? So renunciation, it just means that this experience, feeling that I want to overcome this suffering for oneself or others. So that would be one example. Okay? So two things. Renunciation and realization. So without that, we could not actually begin our path. So that is foundation. Now, this same state of mind is also called Arhat Bodhicitta. Arhat Bodhicitta. So this is related to Hinayana or Theravada tradition. Okay? So earlier I was talking that if there is a suffering and if I cultivate intention to overcome suffering for myself, that is actually bodhicitta or enlightened thought to achieve nirvana. So that's what we need, actually. That is part of the Theravada stages of accumulation. On top of this, bodhicitta, Theravada bodhicitta, then receiving refuge vow. And Theravada refuge vow, in terms of duration, lasts until person is survived. Or when person dies, then the refuge vow actually disappears. But for Mahayana Bodhisattva, refuge vow is taken until the achievement of enlightenment. So time-wise, very long. Okay, so refuge vow, and then taking monastic or layperson's vow, same as what I mentioned earlier, based on ethics as a foundation. Okay. Now, in addition to this, then learning, contemplation, meditation, and ethics includes loving kindness, compassion, all of these practices, learning, are considered as accumulation. Okay. Now, one thing I want to mention is that stage of accumulation is based on these ethics, primarily focusing more on, actually if you go to the next slide, it should have. Okay, so here, with the practice of ethics, primarily engaging with training of learning, contemplation or teachings, this is called stage of accumulation. So what I mentioned this previous slide, and so accumulation is the beginning one, kind of accumulating different practices, doing foundation practices. So all of these are called stage of accumulation. So you are asking what type of practice I do, and it may help what stage you are. So if you are primarily just focusing on the learning and the contemplation, but doing practice secondarily, then you are at the stage of accumulation. Okay. All right. Okay. So then within the Theravada, obtaining substantial insight from learning and contemplation, primarily engaging with the practice of meditation or familiarization, then it becomes stage of application. So stage of application primarily focuses on the actual practice or getting familiarization or practices. So that's why on this stage, one is doing primarily meditation practice, but still keeping learning and contemplation. Okay. So now you can see that we are prioritizing different wisdoms for each stage. And that's what if we prioritize, then we are able to do all three wisdoms. Wisdom of learning, contemplation, and meditation. Now, this is a very important, this last one. The last one is very important because the last practice really distinguishes between Buddhist practice and Hindu practice. Okay, and that's because this particular meditation refers to primary realization of selflessness. So that means insubstantiality of phenomena, or especially actually insubstantiality of self. That means selflessness. So here, now, there are many stages of selflessness. My first interpretation is able to understand and experience this selflessness, self meaning substantiality, selflessness meaning insubstantiality. So insubstantiality of phenomena, or insubstantiality of person or a self, from a deeper reality point of view, not the appearance. Appearance, we perceive ourselves very substantial, and actually that becomes source of lots of sufferings. Because of that, then we may react. So therefore, then we create a cycle of samsara. All right. Okay, so let's see. So in terms of actual practice, if you realize that, let's say I realize that I do not or substantially exist, and I exist because of combination of all my body parts. And so just having that conceptual understanding, that is realization of selfness. But if I go much deeper, without going through the analysis, I see myself, others, and I see directly insubstantiality, then that will be the direct experience. But of course, direct experience, some last very short, others last longer. Okay? So let's go to the next. Okay. So now we are talking about the stages of direct realization, that the third stage, the stage of direct realization. So for Theravadin, direct realization of primarily Four Noble Truths. Now Four Noble Truth is not a very, very short, very brief. It is the most important teaching in the practice. So please not to misunderstand that Theravadin is doing only, that's not true, because Four Noble Truths is also detailed into 16 different characteristics. So each Four Noble Truths has a four, and the practitioner try to gain direct realization of all of the 16 characteristics of Four Noble Truths. So whenever a practitioner experiences suffering, instantly person is able to realize suffering as suffering. Now that is very, very unique practice, because in our daily life, we suffer because we tend to see suffering as pleasure, suffering as happiness, or absence of suffering as something very positive. Okay? But if someone is practicing Four Noble Truths, that person is able to see suffering as suffering, instead of suffering as happiness, feel suffering and directly able to experience suffering as impermanence. So actually suffering dissolves right away. Suffering as emptiness or selflessness, then actually there's no experience of suffering. So these are the direct experience of Four Noble Truth. Okay. Now, one of the most important part, and one of the essential point for today is, whatever paths you see there, it is really designed to overcome our afflicted emotions. Afflicted emotions meaning mental state that interferes to see reality as it is, or afflicted emotions interferes or interrupts our equilibrium of our mind. So for example, let's say attachment or anger. Anger has at least two different levels. One is grosser level of anger. Then there's a subtler level of anger. So when someone reach to the stage, third stage, direct realization, that individual actually overcomes all the coarser, grosser level of afflictive thoughts and emotions. Coarser is more visible, you can notice, person can also notice, but the opposite of that is the subtler level, that is disposition, and that actually is the source. It is like the most root cause of all suffering, and that is called subtler afflict thoughts and emotion. So one person reached to the third stage of direct realization, person overcomes this coarser level. Okay? And because of the reaching the third stage of direct realization according to Theravada, then that practitioner receives three results. It's called a continuing practitioner. Actually, the literal translation is, in Tibetan it's called Gyushu. That means permanent resident. But I translate it as continuing practitioner. So there is some understanding that person who reached to the third stage can be reversible, relapse to their afflicted emotions. And higher than this is also called irreversible, that once person reached this stage, then person would not relapse to their previous afflicted thoughts or emotions. All right, so next one, and then we'll have some discussion, okay? So let us compare to Mahayana Bodhisattva. So again, accumulation, same intention, motivation, out of renunciation or realization. And I explain what renunciation means, urgent sense of urgency to overcome our suffering and sources of suffering. Okay. There's another internal renunciation. External renunciation could be leaving house, leaving material things. But the internal renunciation is the renunciation of afflictive thoughts and emotion. So it's not the material, but it is one's internal afflictive thoughts and emotions. Okay. So the difference is resolve into achieving ultimate transformation or Buddhahood for the sake of all living beings. That is bodhicitta, that is enlightened thought. Okay. Now, once I have that enlightened thought, that particular mind or altruistic thought, then I may engage with my practice much, much longer time, because I have expended my commitment, my engagement for whole living beings. So therefore, you can see differences between this and the Theravada. And so this same thing is called bodhicitta. Okay? So then, upon this mind of bodhicitta, then take refuge vow, take monastic or lay person's precepts, or just take bodhisattva vow, then including that, in addition to that, then learning, contemplation, meditation, then there will be accumulation, okay? So that's, so if you are there, then that's where you are there, okay? If you are not there, then you are not there. Okay, so can we get next? So with the practice of ethics, as I mentioned earlier, primarily engaging with the training of learning, contemplation on teachings, so two, primarily just the learning and contemplation, then stage of accumulation, and then primarily practicing meditation or familiarization, then it moves to the application part. Okay, so if you find yourself that you are practicing more than study, then most likely you are at the stage of application. But if you are focusing lots of time, dedication on study, then you are really primarily at the stage of accumulation, kind of accumulating, collecting lots of readings, lots of teaching, lots of practice, lots of initiations, and keeping very busy, which is great. But you really need to move to the next stage. Okay? Now, I also mentioned here that this particular meditation for this application, again, refers to the realization of self, selflessness, or insubstantiality. Okay. Now, I mentioned the difference between Hindu philosophy and Buddhist. This actually contradicts the Hindu philosophy of self-being, substantial, independent, and that's the major distinction and debate between Buddhism and Hinduism. It's just a different philosophical perspective, and that also affects the practices. Okay, so next. Okay. All right. So now this time, Mayana Bodhisattva. So we are continuing. So this is direct realization. So based on Bodhisattva path, vow, practices, six paramitas, and then actualize the direct realization, the reality of all phenomena, then it is called direct realization. Let me share you one of my understanding. In Buddhist philosophy, there's lots of emphasis on analyzing. And there's lots of critical analysis. And the whole purpose is to really get down here. The whole purpose is to reach to the direct realization. So I hope that your study, understanding, analysis is leading towards more direct experience. Now, if you get to the direct realization, just doing mindfulness practice, your life will be very, very different. And I can tell you, based on what I observe, based on the research that is supporting, basically direct experience meaning that there's no conceptual thought at that moment. Therefore, there's no judgmental thoughts. There's no critical thoughts. There's no positive nor negative. So therefore, direct experience of our emotion, our thoughts, our sensation itself is great liberation. So direct realization is not only the bigger realization of selflessness, but just direct realization of our experience, thought, emotion, sensations as it is, without any conceptual thought. Okay. All right. So, again, it eliminates coarser afflictive thoughts, emotion. And now, I want to show you the main points, and I do not have the skills to create diagrams. So, from starting from third stage of direct realization, there are 10 different stages in mind bodhisattva. Starting from direct realization, only one stage, and then path of familiarization meditation is divided into 9, and I will share you why it is divided into 9. So before that, this direct realization and these teachings that I'm giving you today, actually teachings given by my main teacher, Kembabe Rinpoche's book. And I hope to do this translation, and then maybe in future you may have that book. Mm-hmm. Maybe after 5 years, who knows, right? So Kembabe says the direct realization can be really short. Sure, it can be 1 hour. It can be short, but lasting. Okay, short, and then it will last when you continue your life. It's not like the experience of LSD and then thinking that now that is a direct realization. I'm just kidding. I don't know when this. But direct realization can be very short. I had one direct realization. I'm not sure whether direct realization of some reality. Many years ago, I went to Santa Cruz, and there was one park, and I went there, and I felt very light. I didn't take any substance, any medication. I felt very light, and I felt really, really joy and happy. And not only that, I was actually kind of jumping like a kid. I was really surprised by that, and it didn't last. It lasts maybe 1 hour, and I didn't have any, because it is not based on the realization of reality, so it's the one moment and then it ends. After that, actually, I went to Denver, and I got Denver. I'm not sure this would be a consistent experience. Last time when I went to Denver, I had so much energy and sense of happiness and joy. And I ride bike whole day, and even I was almost late for the flight. They were looking after me, and I was just going to the mountains and playing like a little kid. That was like really like pure joy, and not only that, lightness of body.
That's the Rocky Mountain
high. Rocky Mountain. Maybe I connect to the Rocky Mountain, maybe higher altitude. But I didn't have a headache or any dizziness with that, just pure joy. But anyhow, next, please. Bob, you seem to like that one. You are alert. Okay. All right. So that is the stage of familiarization, meaning whatever direct experience we had, now we are actually repeating that, practicing that again and again. So we are expanding the reality, realization, expanding the transformation. So therefore, duration-wise, this path of familiarization or meditation takes long time. And I will show you why it may take long time later on. So it is divided into 9 stages based on realization of reality and transformation of afflictive thoughts and emotion. And again, starting from stage of familiarization, now it actually transforms the root and the subtler. That means like unconscious materials, dispositions, very, very subtle patterns that we have, not only this lifetime, many lifetimes, and we keep on going through the cycle again and again. That indicates that this root or the subtler afflictive thoughts, consciousness are still there. Okay? So the objective is to reduce this and eliminate this. So because of that, it takes a long time. Long, many, many years, many lifetimes, right? And in reality, it depends. It depends one's individual's realization and transformation. But there is a correlation between how much realization we have relates to how much transformation we'll have. So let's see the slide. Next. So this is what I work. I finally asked someone to help me. So these are the 9 stages. So it has only 7?
Yes.
So it has 2 more there. And I could not type here afflictive, the subtler afflictive thoughts, emotion. That is what is. Okay? So within Mayana Bodhisattva, the realized being, so the path of familiarization is divided into 9. And the way how we come up 9 is like this. So for example, anger. Anger is divided into 3 first. Big anger, middling, and then small. And then the big one, big middle, big small. Okay? Same middle big, middle small. And then small, big, small, middle, and small. There. The smallest, subtlest one. So the idea is that bigger the afflictive emotion thoughts we have, smaller antidotes we need. Okay? Because we want to save the biggest and the strongest one at the very end to eliminate this small. Small is harder, not the size, but the density and the ability is much, much stronger. So therefore, we have biggest wisdom for the smallest afflict emotion. Okay? So, based on this, because we have 9 anger, 9 attachment, 9 jealousy, 9 pride, now we have 9 wisdom like that for anger, or 9 wisdom and compassion as the antidote. Okay? So therefore, now we have within the 9, so starting from here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 9. And then what happens is, then the question is, when do we reach full enlightenment? So that means the smallest, whenever the biggest wisdom that eliminates the smallest one, the moment after that, then one becomes Buddha. Okay? Until we reach there, we're making progress each time when you are practicing. Okay? So, any question? So you have the map now.
So sometimes, sometimes in Buddhism you hear talk or you know sort of instructions about you know being in the present moment,
right.
You know, and leaving conceptual thought and
right.
No past, no future.
Right.
So how is that consistent with this idea of stages of development? I mean, if there's no past, there's no future.
Right.
If we're just in the present moment.
Right. That's true. And there is no present moment at that time.
Oh, okay.
So again, for the beginners, we'll say if beginners rest your mind on the present, prevent from going to the past. If it goes, notice, bring back to the present. Same for the future, right? That's the beginning instruction. But more intermediate, now is, if there is no past and present future, then there is no present. So therefore, rest your mind whatever is there. And no reference to time.
Could you say a little bit more about the density of the afflictive emotions, why the smallest one is more of a core, more tightly packed?
Yeah, it's the understanding is that if it is bigger, then it is more noticeable, visible, we will know it. Right? I will know my anger, my attachment. But if I have a very subtle, it may come maybe in the form of maybe platonic love when it is a romantic love. Make sense? Maybe. I hope you get that one. By this time. I'm just kidding.
So subtle is like
if sometimes you find a rock that is very small, but when you break, it takes much longer time compared to you find a bigger rock, and you, depending on what type of rock, but bigger is easier to break it down.
So the subtler afflictions are harder to spot,
yes.
So they're harder
yes.
to deal with.
It's almost like we have a target, and we have a bigger target, which can be easier to reach there. But if there's just one spot, then it will be very difficult to hit that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea.
I'm thinking like anger, we can probably all recognize when we're angry.
Right.
But with something like racism,
right.
You know,
yes.
Or prejudice, we might
right.
not recognize that as easily.
Right.
It's more subtle, it's harder to eradicate.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
Yes. Any other question? Okay.
Doesn't that subtleness also have to do with the sort of the you know, the difficulty of letting go of things.
Yes.
I mean, we sometimes can, I think, let go of some parts of something, you know, like material wealth, you know,
right.
like we may say, oh, you know, I have enough,
right.
I'm fine, I'm okay.
Right.
But really, at
that
some
is the
level,
grosser
we're still,
level,
we're not really to let it all go.
Right, right.
At some point, we're going to grab really
right,
hard.
Right, right,
mm-hmm.
right, right. So material attachment to material position would be grosser level of attachment, but then attachment to one's idea, one's emotion, that could be really subtler. That so grosser, subtler is also defined in terms of how easy to overcome and how difficult to overcome. Okay. So next slide, and please keep on asking questions.
Oh, there?
Yeah.
You can be later.
Oh, okay. I'm done, actually.
Oh. So related to that last subject, I sometimes have struggle, let's say, with, I have been meditating for many years, and there are some things that I see that I can apply that are not anymore like just concepts, and I see it in my life. But there are some particular, maybe a person or some particular things that are really, that I cannot just apply it. I just can't. Mm-hmm. And then I have this concept in my mind of how I should be doing it
mm-hmm.
better. And I just
mm-hmm.
feel guilty because I'm not practicing.
Oh, I see.
So, example is my mom, for example. I struggle with her a lot,
mm-hmm.
like badly.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I have come to do with time is just put distance.
Mm-hmm.
I just
yes.
feel that I can't.
Right.
And some days I feel like I should be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so strong that
right.
when I'm there, I don't feel that I can be mindful.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. So I you, before you expand, expand in detail, I had this idea that when we apply something when it is not working, then that just means it's not the stage, the right stage. So we just leave it, and then do something else. And then we try to follow natural process. That's what I meant. So we don't need to force to do certain practice with oneself or others. And you focus on what practice that is helpful to you and focus more on that. And then you apply this certain person and somehow it doesn't work, then we just say, okay, this is not the right condition, so that's okay. I'm going to continue my practice. Anyhow, I'm going to continue my practice. That's the attitude. We do have more issues and struggles with those ones. And our understanding is that sometimes, not all the time, we tend to have more expectation with the close ones, so therefore that much actually we encounter lots of emotions or issues. And comparing to people who are not close, so let's say distant, so we have lesser emotional connections, less expectations, so they do not tend to affect us very much. So basically taking break or creating space when it is not working and then come back again. Okay. So I didn't continue explaining how does Buddha look like. I think I explained last time, and so maybe it's a completely different topic for next time, talking about details about 108 characteristics, physical, psychological, and vocal. So there are many, many qualities.
Can we just get a glimpse of that screen?
Which?
The 108?
There is 108. No, I do not have.
So what does the pictures of the brain have
this
to do
picture,
with the 108?
Yes, actually that's a very good point. These days, I would say that we are very, very fortunate Dharma practitioners, maybe more fortunate than before. That is because all the latest research neuroscientists are consistently reporting that our practice, our mental states, our compassion, our loving kindness, gentleness, really changes our brain structure and neurons. Now, we, in the West and in the East, in Buddhist, we usually go mind to brain or mind to body. Neuroscience in the past only brain to mind, and now there's a common understanding that it is both ways. So therefore, it is, doing Dharma practice is not only for your spiritual practice, but for the health purpose. You still do it anyway. That's why I brought this beautiful colorful, at least.
They are imaging now, the neurons,
yes,
and so forth. Yeah. And I did, I just got through reading another book. About a woman who actually discovered a lot of the chemicals,
mm-hmm,
that work on the brain,
mm-hmm,
and create different states and so forth. And the chemicals, she came to the realization that because the chemicals are created in our bodies and flow to the brain and all the way down through the body, finally came to the realization that the mind, the brain, mind, body are one. Okay, it's all one.
Mm-hmm.
So she thought that this is the possibility that, yes, you know, the whole, that's what our soul or,
mm-hmm,
our
okay,
would be. Okay. I'm not right. Expressing it very well.
You did. So I want to mention that it's not only doing meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You ride your bike, run, or any motor skills will also change neurons. Listening music will change. So it's really not Dharma practice.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you engage these activities and tends to change, and also neurogenesis that grows new neurons. So it's the same as saying, so brain scientists will say neurons and maybe brain. And then Buddhist teaching may say mind, mental factors, mental states. They're talking the same thing, but for two different things. Okay. Any other questions? So any other questions about path or methods? Yes.
Well, this may not be about path or methods.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a question about the concept of not self.
Mm-hmm.
And I am struggling with the philosophical,
mm-hmm,
implications of that.
Mm-hmm.
If there is not a self,
mm-hmm,
how can there be karma, which is all individualistic,
mm-hmm,
that goes from one life to another?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, so the answer for that is that I didn't mention today, in path, it's called a union of path. So both the wisdom and compassion. And in basis, union of basis, meaning union of basis, meaning union of two truths, the ultimate truth and conventional truth. When we talk about selflessness, we're talking about the ultimate truth. Ultimate truth meaning if we thoroughly analyze, then we will not find self. We will not find table. Actually, we will not find building, house. We will not find. Last time I had a thought, it's closest realization. I had one of those medical checkup, and the medical check, general checkup, and the result came. And there's my name, but it says Jamyang has this calorie and this body weight or what do you call it, dex, what, and then it says bone, so it listed. Mm-hmm. But I thought, where is Jamyang? The lab test says just bunch of these tests, these bones and blood and skins, and there's no Jamyang. So I thought that, oh, maybe that is good analogy to explain Westerners. So no self or selfless only refers to the ultimate truth. Convention truth, there's a self. There's a self, there's a karma, there's a result, there's a house. So we do not debate with ordinary beings saying self does not exist or whole house. We do not debate. Instead, union of the reality and appearance. So the idea is, I see self, but I also see the selflessness. And I also see the selflessness, I also see the self. Okay? So that combination of two level of truth is really mm-hmm. needed for our life. So I see car, usually I see car, and I do not see the reality. I just see the car, appearance of car, and then car breaks down, I'll be break down too, because I and car become one. Okay? So now I have this reality of car, that the car is impermanence. So now, when I drive car, I see the car, but also see the impermanence. And when I see the impermanence, I do not deny the existence of the car. Mm-hmm. I see impermanence, still I drive. Okay? So you have both. And that is more complete explanation of what selflessness is. Okay?
Right. So then karma is only on the...
On the conventional.
On the relative side?
Yes, yes.
Really?
Yes, okay. Yes. But if we analyze anything, then it becomes ultimate truth. Okay? So if I analyze this cause, where is the cause? What is the cause? If I analyze seed of tomato and bring the seed of tomato and I smash it and smash and I still try to find a tomato. I smash the two. The subtlest particle of tomato or seed. I will not find, that cannot be called, the subtlest pieces of tomato seed cannot be tomato seed. Is it?
Probably won't grow.
So if it doesn't grow, how can we call it tomato seed, right? So if we analyze, then it reaches to the ultimate truth. Appearance means we do not analyze, we just keep as it is and live with that. Okay. So when you hear Buddhist teaching, you really need to ask question, is this conventional point of view or is this the ultimate point of view? You really have to ask that question. all the paths that you hear only from conventional point of view. Even the reserved Buddha itself is a conventional. Because reality should be very consistent. In ultimate reality, there's no existence of Buddha itself. There's no person. Now you are very surprised.
And so they're saying there, and there's no karma.
And there's no karma, yes. And you technically, you actually don't say no karma, no self. Ultimate truth is inexpressible. Whenever you express it, it becomes conceptual material. So therefore, it's not anymore ultimate truth. But for the communication purpose, we need to say no self, selflessness, emptiness. But even we say emptiness, it's really not emptiness. It is beyond from emptiness. So the best answer of what ultimate truth is, inexpressible. Now, inexpressible, consistent, longer durations, it's not one of those short-term inexpressible movements and thinking that is the ultimate truth. So, any other questions? Did you get what path is, the distinction between the five paths, or at least four paths? So, Jen, can you bring the dedication? Just leave it as it is.
The
Shanti Devas.
The Shanti Devas, yeah.
So we'll do the dedication and then we'll end this. End our session.
I can't do anything about it, so it's no problem.
You don't get it. You don't listen to prairie hunk companion, too.
I do.
Okay.
But anyway, it's no problem. It's no problem.
Do you need one of these gentlemen?
No, I think you
do. I guess there's plenty in the recycle. Do you have more?
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You remember.
Well, she's a neurophysiologist.
So, Bob, can you please start? Yeah.
May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled, with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms, and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored by finding repose. May the naked find clothing, and the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be free. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the misery of the world.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Geshe-la.
And drive safe. That's the reality, right?
Oh, actually, that's the movie. Tomorrow night, movie night, Dharma movie night here at 7 o'clock. Unmistaken Child. Free, yes. Come, everyone.
When is that?
Can you explain about the Mistaken Child a little bit? Briefly.
Well, it's about a lama who goes in search of his deceased guru and finds him in a child, essentially, and follows the child. Yeah, beautiful documentary.
It is, it's really awesome.
Another announcement, Geshe-la has recommended to us this book to be for study and background reading during the month of March. I ordered, I think, like 15 copies from Wisdom. Only 6 left, so we have some. But if there are people who would like copies, I can make another order. They'll come in a week, so you know there's plenty of time if people want to take a look at this book and purchase a copy. We have these.
They're $17,
right? Yeah, $17 to $20. Yeah. Right.
John, I missed it. Is that for a book group or for?
No, it's for our. It's for
Thursday. For Thursday meditation practice. Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Having a good time. Meditation is doing surprisingly well. Yeah, even 10, 11, 12 people.
I shouldn't have
looked
in a way, so
this is
the first I've seen.
Yes, applying.
Before you die.
I'll work on it. Anyway, keep trying. I don't have that much time left.
I think we should do it tomorrow. Yeah. Okay, with the DVD.
Not impossible. Yes.
17, 12.
That was great, Geshe-la.
Yeah,
it
was really good.
So yeah, that whole graphic of the course to the subtle and the wisdoms that are associated.
Oh, I see.
I mean, you talked about that before, and it's
yes,
just like, I guess it was the visual art.
Yes, visual is much better.
Really good. It was awesome. Yeah. Do you use that at school?
No, it's the first
time.
It's
just for us?
For, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I just created.
All right.